Well, if you had any hope yesterday that the world would maybe start to return to normal, forget about that because the so-called ceasefire lasted less than 12 hours. A couple of things happened over the last 24 hours. One is that Israel unleashed horrific bombing of civilian residential buildings in Lebanon, killing hundreds of innocent people, including many children. And Israel declared publicly, we don't respect any ceasefire, any peace deal, exactly as I predicted right here on this podcast yesterday. But then, in addition to that, this is really something, Trump and the White House basically said, what peace deal? What are you talking about? What 10-point plan? Carolyn Leavitt, who is the chief liar for the White House, I mean, just an enabler of crimes against humanity is what she's doing. She said that the president threw the 10-point plan in the trash. This is the same plan that just almost a day earlier, Trump was apparently celebrating, talking about how the Middle East is going to have a new golden era and we're all going to make so much money, because that's the only way that Trump thinks about things is how much money they're going to make. You know, that's his entire worldview. He only has one dimension, and it's how much money can he make off of everybody else. But then later in the evening, Trump posted this quote, all U.S. ships, aircraft, and military personnel, with additional ammunition, weaponry, and anything else that is appropriate and necessary for the lethal prosecution and destruction of an already substantially degraded enemy, will remain in place in and around Iran until such time as the real agreement reached is fully complied with, although he has not announced what is the real agreement. It only exists in his head, I think. He goes on, he says, if for any reason it is not, which is highly unlikely, then the shooting starts bigger and better and stronger than anyone has ever seen before. Yes, Trump is insane. Yes, he needs to be removed from office. But anyway, he continues, it was agreed a long time ago, and despite all of the fake rhetoric to the contrary, no nuclear weapons, and the Strait of Hormuz will be open and safe. In the meantime, our great military is loading up and resting, looking forward, actually, to its next conquest. America is back! And you can just hear the, you know, the song, America, F yeah! You know the song I'm talking about from the puppet show movie? Yeah, Team America, that's the song. Okay, so we have truly arrived at a point where Trump is incomprehensible, utterly mad, like mercury poisoning level of insanity. He has no consistent reality. This is where we're at. You know, 12 hours earlier, he could have tweeted, "Hey, we have a deal, it's going to be peace, everything's great." And then, you know, 12 hours later, he's like, we're going to kill you all and destroy your civilization. That's where we are with Trump. And he exists solely at this point to rig markets and make a lot of money for his insiders and family members and whoever else is close enough to him to get the inside scoop so they can place bets on Polymarket or oil futures or what have you. That's Trump's only remaining function. Except from the Democrats' point of view, Trump's function is actually to stay in office and continue to embarrass the GOP, which he's doing at a master level. No one has done more to discredit the GOP, probably since Richard Nixon, than Donald Trump today. He is absolutely gutting the credibility of the party, but also the credibility of the United States. However, the Democrats really want Trump to stay in power at least until the midterms. And he will, probably, until the midterms. And then, who knows? Democrats may try to impeach him next year, but they don't really want to remove him with a vote in the Senate. So they'll impeach him in the House, making sure that they lose the removal vote in the Senate, which they might not have, you know, 60 votes or whatever it takes there for the impeachment anyway, you know, for the removal. So they'll vote in the House to impeach him. But they still want Trump in the White House all the way up through the 2028 elections so that they can have a clean sweep. Democrats take the House, the Senate, and the White House. If there's anything left by then, which is increasingly doubtful. I'm always skeptical of how long this whole clown show charade can even continue. And that brings me to my next point. The Mad Max scenario is back on, folks. It's back on. Remember how yesterday I was talking about if the Strait of Hormuz is open, and if Iran allows, let's say, 100 ships a day to pass through the strait, it's going to take 30 full days of wide open strait for 3,000 ships to pass through there. And, you know, whether that number is accurate, are there really 3,000 ships in there? I don't know. Maybe there's 2,000. Maybe there's 2,500. Whatever. You're going to have that thing open close to 30 days, and we didn't even get 30 hours. So forget the, you know, all the good news and, oh, it's wide open. We opened the strait. We're, you know, we won. Didn't win jack. Strait's closed. The war is back on, which means that the Mad Max outcome scenario is also back on. For all the countries in the world that are on the edge of losing their energy, losing their fuel, losing their industry, losing their food and farming and fertilizer, that whole scenario, back on. Reactivated, reanimated, like the undead rising from the grave. I'm back, you know. That's because Trump is an absolute raging lunatic. And so the world is going to suffer like never before. And I don't see a scenario at this point where this ends. Unless Israel is stopped. See, Israel is the spoiler in all of this, as you may have guessed. Israel started the bombing immediately, so we don't honor any ceasefire. Meanwhile, Pakistan, which had served as the hub of the so-called negotiations, Pakistan said, yeah, the agreement is that Israel should stop bombing Lebanon. And Israel said, well, we don't agree to that. And then later on, the White House said, well, we didn't agree to that either. It's not even in the agreement. But it is. It actually is in the agreement. It's in the text that Pakistan put out publicly all over Twitter, you know. So there is no agreement. There is no off-ramp for the United States. There is no solution for the world's energy supplies and helium supplies and everything else that we've talked about. And unless Israel is stopped, our world burns. This is the realization that so many people have finally come to, is that our world can never know peace as long as Israel exists. Israel has zero interest in peace or abundance or coexistence with any other country. Israel simply wants to slaughter, murder, pillage, steal everything and command everything. And it's willing to just commit genocide and war crimes day after day after day. And notice that the Democrats, most of them will not denounce Israel because they're bought and paid for by Israel also. So, by the way, don't think that replacing the GOP with the Democrats is going to solve this problem. No, it isn't. It's just going to be a different set of political whores who are still controlled by Israel. So think about that when election time comes up. The Democrats aren't denouncing Israel's genocide, nor is anybody in the corporate media, nor is anybody in the Senate. Nobody. I mean, except a couple of members of the House, like Thomas Massey, etc., and former members like Marjorie Taylor Greene. So Israel is the problem for our world. Our world cannot get back on its feet in terms of supply chains, energy, fertilizer, food, etc., as long as Israel exists. And the only way that Israel will ever stop is if you make them stop. That is, Israel will never, in my view, voluntarily stop bombing its neighbors. Israel will never voluntarily stop committing genocide, because it's in the nature of the Zionists that run Israel to murder and slaughter and kill and steal, because, of course, they are Satanists. They are seething with evil and hatred towards fellow human beings. So literally the only way that our world can ever get back on its feet and prevent the mass famine, the starvation deaths of potentially billions of people, the only way to stop that is to dismantle Israel, to take down Israel. And the only way to do that, clearly, is by force. Because, again, Israel will not honor any agreement. They've proven it over and over and over again. So what Trump should actually do is redirect the entire U.S. military to assault Israel, bomb Tel Aviv, go in with all the U.S. Marines and troops, go in, arrest all the leaders of Israel, take all the nuclear weapons out of Israel. If you want to do a nuclear rescue mission, there it is. Take the nukes away from Israel. Prosecute all the war criminals there, which is, you know, almost everybody in government and the military there. Prosecute all the IDF people and dismantle Israel so that it can never rise again to the evil, satanic, genocidal regime that it is today. You have to dismantle and end all recognition for Israel as a legitimate nation. You have to basically reverse the UN Charter for the very existence of Israel, because the people of Israel, the leaders of it, have proven that they cannot coexist with anybody else in our world. And that's the only solution there is. Anything short of that, if you don't do that, in other words, the world burns and people starve and you have economic collapse. And so, effectively, Trump must now make a choice. He has to make a choice between either serving Israel or serving the rest of humanity, including the United States. If you choose Israel, which of course he will, because they have blackmail on him, then the world burns. And the war goes on, and the strait stays closed for who knows how long, how many months or longer. And everybody suffers, and lots of people die. On the other hand, if Trump would choose humanity and America, then he would immediately cut off all funding to Israel, all military aid, all weapons, all intelligence, all communications, all diplomatic recognition. He would actually go in and bomb Israel and assault Israel and arrest all of its leaders and shut that demonic country down. Only then would Trump actually be doing something presidential and something in America's interest. Because Israel is not America's greatest ally, as we're always told. Israel is America's greatest enemy. Israel is, in fact, the enemy of all of humanity. Israel is the country that is dragging our world into destruction, potentially with nuclear weapons. And if anybody uses them, it'll be Israel first, almost certainly. So if Trump severs all ties with Israel, even invades and bombs Israel and dismantles the entire country, then Trump could redeem himself as MAGA, putting America first, and actually, maybe then he would get the Nobel Peace Prize. Maybe he would earn it at that point. If, you know, if you arrest Netanyahu and completely dismantle the Zionist regime, you deserve a Nobel Peace Prize. Because that's the ultimate act of peace for our world right now. That's the act of peace that the world needs more than anything else. And if you can't do that, then you need to be removed. And by the way, this is just a personal note, but I will never vote for a candidate that takes money from Israel again. I mean, I'm sure I have in the past because I didn't know that they took money from Israel, because so many of them do. But from now on, I will check carefully. That's going to become my number one vote. My number one issue is whether they take money from Israel. Period. They take money from Israel, they do not have my support at all. And that's the way we all need to act, because Israel has infested America's political ecosystem like a parasite, like a zombie parasite that's causing America to destroy itself. And that's part of the plan from Netanyahu as well, is to destroy the Gulf nations, to get Iran to bomb those nation states into oblivion, to get America to bomb Iran, and then to get America to self-destruct, because it suffers financial collapse from spending so much money on wars. And then when all that is said and done, then Israel will try to assert its projection of power for greater Israel using the nuclear weapons it still has, and it will threaten all of its neighbors, and it will bomb and kill and murder and rape and pillage, because that's what Zionists do. Until some future date when they're stopped by somebody else, maybe by Russia, maybe by China, who knows? But America doesn't have long left at this pace because of the debt, the horrible debt situation that we have been thrust into. And there are evil people out there that are counting on that. In the meantime, as all of this is happening, some of the leaders of the so-called Christian churches are, of course, preaching the end of days, but you got to give them all your money first. Here we have John Hagee. I forgot what group he's part of, but it's some big, like, Americans for Israel group or something. He's a Christian Zionist pastor, and he says that everybody has to immediately prepare for the return of Jesus Christ, who's going to rule for 1,000 years from Jerusalem. Mm-hmm. Because Israel, even modern-day Israel that commits genocide, is, according to Hagee, it's the perfect reflection of Jesus Christ, even though it was the Israeli priests that demanded the execution of Jesus to be carried out by the Romans, but at the demand of the Israeli priests. We've been over this before. So Hagee says that God has commanded all Christians and all churches to bless Jewish people under any circumstances, even if they are carrying out genocide and child trafficking and rape, whatever. Hagee says that that's Jesus working, and you have to support that. So according to Hagee, in essence, although I'm paraphrasing, Hagee basically says that Jesus supports rapists and Jesus supports genocide. Jesus supports murder. That's what the Christian churches have become today. Under these lunatic Zionist pastors like Hagee and a lot of others. Gregory Locke is another lunatic as well. There's a bunch of them. And, you know, in my view, they're all spiritual con artists. It's very clear. There's a famous meme that circulates on this. It says, "No Bible verse compels me to support a nation formed in 1948 by UN partition, United Nations, and international bankers." Because that's not in the Bible. By the way, you know, see, modern-day Israel just stole the name Israel from the Old Testament to trick simple-minded Christian Zionist morons into thinking that modern day Israel is the same Israel of the Bible. They just took the name. It's impersonation. It would be like, you know, if you founded the Church of Brad Pitt or something, and then you pretended that you were Brad Pitt, and all the followers thought you were Brad Pitt, you know. Not that he would lead a church or anything. I'm just using that as an example, but you get the idea. So they said, "We're Israel." No, they're not. They impersonated Israel. It's identity theft at the spiritual level. And then in the name of that identity theft, then they carry out acts of extreme genocide and sinister evil and satanic destruction, etc., etc. Now, getting back to the Trump tweet that we started with here, Colonel Daniel Davis, who's been doing a lot of excellent work on this, he reacted to that. I want to read part of his statement. He said, "President Trump's Truth Social post makes it appear that he only agreed to a ceasefire with Iran to reload our ammo in the planes and ships. That only reinforces the reputation he has already earned of deceiving negotiating partners into believing he's engaging in good faith diplomacy while in reality preparing for the next attack. Iran no doubt expected more deception from us and has prepared accordingly, but the president will not materially gain from this extra time or ammo reload because our problem isn't adequate quantities of offense and defense missiles. The problem is we embarked on a war without justification, without legal authorization, and that is militarily unattainable. All the ammunition in the world won't win this for us because you can't bomb a country 4 times bigger than Iraq and into submission solely by air power. And even if you could muster a field army of 500,000 men, which we can't, that still wouldn't achieve a victory. The best thing President Trump could do, now that he started a war of choice he shouldn't have chosen, is to end it quickly. At this point, I would cheer on a taco outcome, because as bad as it would genuinely be, that is less bad than foolishly ignoring reality and still trying to double down and send in more combat power. That will only increase the cost of our eventual defeat, which is now baked in. And Daniel Davis is correct. This is going to end in a humiliating United States military defeat. In fact, the U.S. military has already been defeated. The question is, how much more does Trump want to humiliate the United States military and the reputation of the U.S. as a geopolitical entity? How much more? It's kind of like a street fight between two guys, and one of them just getting beat up so badly, and you know, teeth are broken and nose is broken, blood's coming out of their eyes, and they're like, I'm going to kick your ass, you know, and oh, you want some more beating? Okay. You know, start breaking fingers and elbows and, you know, skull or cheekbones and skull bones and things like that. They're like, I'm winning. I'm kicking your ass. That's Trump. That's Trump, and that's the U.S. military. You're not winning anything. The only question is, how much of a bloody pulp do you want to end up being, metaphorically speaking, you know, militarily speaking, by the time this whole conflict ends? How much more embarrassment do you want for the United States military? And apparently Trump wants all of it. He wants total defeat. Historic. Like, I don't know, what do you even compare this to? Like Custer's last stand defeat level or something, you know, Alamo level defeat, except that's not a great metaphor because we're not the defenders, but you get the idea. Trump wants a massive military defeat for America to completely destroy any remaining credibility of the United States of America. Or at least that's the direction he's moving in, which probably at the behest of Netanyahu, who wants that exact outcome as well. Anyway, bottom line here, folks, is that the world's supply chain is still wrecked. The Mad Max scenario is still unfolding. And unless there's some off-ramp to this conflict, which there clearly doesn't seem to be, you know, tried that already, then I don't see how 8 billion people can continue to survive on this planet without the materials coming out of the Persian Gulf. I'm talking about, you know, the energy, the natural gas, the fertilizer, all of it. Clearly, we can't support 8 billion people without those molecules coming out of the Persian Gulf. And if you thought that Israel's genocide against the citizens of, you know, Palestine and Gaza was bad, which it was, that was hundreds of thousands of people killed. Those are rookie numbers compared to how many Israel will indirectly kill with U.S. help by waging this war on Iran that could result in the deaths of billions of human beings. We're talking about a whole new level of Holocaust here, something that would dwarf even, you know, the Jews' claims of 6 million deaths in World War II. Those would be tiny numbers compared to what is likely coming if we don't resolve this issue. And the shocking thing to me is that almost nobody seems to understand this. Because, you know, there's still food on the shelves today. There's still gas at the gas station today. Especially America, they think, oh, it's a war over there that does not affect us. But it will. It will affect us. It's just, there's a delay. There's just a delay. So, yeah, it's coming. Unfortunately. All right, let me mention a couple things. On the good news side, we have our own new vitamin D3 plus K2 supplement now at healthrangerstore.com. And you would not believe how incredibly difficult it is to source vitamin D3 in a responsible, ethical manner that does not have weird hidden ingredients in it, which nobody lists on the label. We need to do a whole story one day on the vitamin D supply chain scam, because it's a quagmire, let me tell you. I had no idea how dirty and deceptive it was until we tried to start sourcing our own bulk vitamin D with K2, etc., which, again, now available at healthrangerstore.com, laboratory tested, also on top of that, of course. But this one ingredient, vitamin D3, you would think it would be something simple. It is not. It is not. And the FDA doesn't require these processing, what do they call them? Processing aids, processing components to be listed on the label. And so what we found is that the D3 industry is just saturated with these unlisted so-called processing components that are there. You're just not allowed to know that they're there. And so sourcing clean vitamin D without that stuff, that took us, I think, over a year. It's just extraordinary. So anyway, maybe one day I'll tell you the whole story because it's crazy. You think you're in the supplements business, you think everything's going to be clean? Oh, no. You think you're in the clean foods industry, like everything's going to be clean? Uh-uh. Nope. In fact, I guess every industry is filthy dirty. And unless you really go all out to try to source clean things, you're just going to end up reselling dirty garbage, which is what you find almost everywhere. But not with us. We do the testing. We have clean foods and superfoods and nutritional supplements. So check that out. Again, healthrangerstore.com. I also want to mention there's a 10% off Easter sale that is continuing through this Saturday, I believe. Yeah, or maybe, no, end of day Friday at the Limitless Biotech Peptide Company that I recommend. And I use their intranasal peptides with great success. They're BPC-157. They've also got oral supplementation of MK-777. You can do a lot of research about that. These are not dietary supplements. They're not FDA approved. They're not prescription drugs. They are experimental peptides. Many of them have a natural basis in the human body, such as BPC-157. And if you go to rangerdeals.com, you'll see the link right there for Limitless. Just click on that. You can get the 10% off, and also, if you enter discount code RANGER, you get another 10% off. Or it might even be 15%. No, maybe it's only 10. But try it, and you get both of those discounts together. But they're not discounting everything. They're only discounting, I think, the oral formulas and the intranasal formulas, maybe, but definitely the oral. And check out what they have available there. Note that I have now been able to work out for 13 months. Yeah, it's been 13 months. It was a year ago March that I started being able to work out again because of BPC-157, because of this company. And I have meticulously worked out now, several times a week, outdoors, in my forest, jogging, doing kettlebells and strength training, etc., for 13 months with extraordinary strength gains and incredible benefits, all kinds of benefits of endurance and things like that. So whereas before that I was suffering from a lot of back pain due to previous injuries, martial arts injuries mostly. Too much jiu-jitsu and Krav Maga and stuff like that. Little too much. But this BPC-157 actually restores blood supply to scar tissue and joints, and it allows your body to heal itself. It just gives you the signal to heal. So there's a supplement that I recommend there that you can check out. It is, it's BPC-157, but there's other formulas that combine it with a number of things as well. I think there's one called the Intestinal Research Formula that's worth checking out, but there's also an intranasal form as well. So again, you can find all that at rangerdeals.com. And just click on Limitless there and use discount code RANGER, and you'll also get the Easter savings through Friday. So take advantage of that. All right, well, get ready for a crazy ride. Thank you for listening. Catch more of my podcasts at brightvideos.com and my articles at naturalnews.com. Take care. We now have vitamin D3 plus K2 plus Aquaman, which is a seaweed calcium, available at healthrangerstore.com. Here, I've got it up on my site here. This is the Groovy Bee brand that we have, which is our in-house brand, healthrangerstore.com. Again, vitamin D3 plus K2 with Aquaman. That's the brand of the seaweed calcium.
in a capsule format. Of course, it's laboratory tested for heavy metals and glyphosate and microbiology and so much more. And it's certified ingredients, of course. And, you know, everything that we build for you in terms of a product is meticulously sourced. And one of the most difficult products to source is actually vitamin D3. It's extremely difficult because it turns out in the supply chain, almost all vitamin D has a bunch of sort of unnamed ingredients in it. And that's what our sourcing people found after a couple of years of trying to source a clean version of vitamin D3 that we finally found and nailed and put it in the formula and did all the lab testing and certification. So now it's available. So this synergistic combination, if you think about natural bone support, for example, or you think about the fact that so many people may not have sufficient levels of vitamin D for just optimal health and immune support and, you know, many other reasons to have vitamin D levels, this product can help you supplement that. And so it's available now, healthrangerstore.com, vitamin D3 plus K2 with Aquaman, 60 capsules available, shipping right now while supplies last. And in this environment where global supply chains are getting wrecked, you know, if this is something you want, get it now while we have supplies, because it's becoming more difficult and more expensive to source literally everything at this point. So anyway, thank you for your support. You can also find many other products, of course, hundreds of different products at healthrangerstore.com, including storable food. And right here we have our organic powdered chicken bone broth in a number 10 can, our turmeric root powder, and so much more. We've got so many amazing products for you to choose from, including tinctures, superfoods, storable foods, as well as freeze-dried fruits and vegetables in sealed number 10 cans. That's great for long-term storage. Plus, we have iodine, and that's a product that's moving very quickly because of concerns about, you know, global nuclear war, unfortunately. But you can find all of this. It's all laboratory tested. It's all certified. It's all meticulously sourced at healthrangerstore.com. And yeah, there we go. That's what the vitamin D3 looks like there. Thank you for supporting us, because we need your support in order to fund our platform. And so we can keep bringing you amazing interviews and content and free AI tools for knowledge and so much more. So thank you for supporting us. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, for healthrangerstore.com. Well, since we are now facing the very real possibility of global nuclear war, and, you know, the nuclear codes are under the control of an insane person named Donald J. Trump, who has absolutely lost his mind, a lot of people are very interested in how to survive a nuclear war all of a sudden. I mean, rationally. How do you survive a nuclear war? Like, actually, not science fiction or Hollywood. What do you actually do if the nukes start going off in the Middle East? Does that instantly mean we all die? No, that's not what it means. How do you survive? Well, you know, what's the aftermath? So let me just walk through some of that for you here. So first of all, if the nuke doesn't hit you directly, if you're not within the blast radius and the thermal destruction zone, so that's step one, is realizing that you're not going to die instantly. If there's bombs that go off in the Middle East and you're in North America, you know, you're not going to die instantly, obviously. Then the question becomes the fallout. The fallout of the iodine-131 and the cesium-137 and the other radioisotopes of strontium and whatever else is produced. There's a lot of them. Some of them decay very rapidly within seconds or minutes. Others take much longer, but it depends on the wind patterns. So the predominant winds of the region, my understanding is that they tend to blow from north to south, maybe to the southwest. At least that's what I've read. I don't live there, so I'm not sure. But if they blow to the southwest, then if you nuke Iran, then all that radiation, or a lot of it's going to fall on the Gulf states. It's going to fall on UAE and Saudi Arabia, Oman and Qatar, etc. So nuking Iran would be a death sentence for the Gulf nations. More so than for Iran, because, you know, Iran is a very large country. And if nukes were used,
they could not possibly blanket the entire country. And a lot of that radiation would just drift over the Persian Gulf and, you know, south into the Arabian Sea. And the Strait of Hormuz would be irradiated. You know, all those Arab nations would be irradiated. So the loss of life there and the rendering of those nations into uninhabitable zones, that would unleash a global energy collapse that would have far more dire consequences than the nukes themselves. So, for example, the loss, the semi-permanent loss of fertilizer production out of the region, which would affect potentially billions of people. So the very first takeaway from this podcast is that the nukes themselves won't kill nearly as many people as the after effects of the nukes. And even if you survive the nuclear weapons, which you would if you're living somewhere else, you would survive the detonations. You may not survive what happens next, which would be a global collapse of food and energy and governments and industry, etc. That's the big takeaway here. Unless this goes into, you know, dozens of nukes or hundreds of nukes, then in North America, you're not going to be dealing with crazy levels of fallout. I mean, yeah, there will be some amount of radiation that gets airborne, some amount of cesium-137, which has a half-life of about 30 years. And yeah, that's a factor, but it's not going to be enough to kill you outright from the radiation. And it's relatively easy to protect yourself against iodine-131, which has a half-life of about 1 week. To do that, all you have to do is, you know, take some iodine, saturate your thyroid. That will protect you, at least it will protect your thyroid from the iodine-131, although you can still get radiation, obviously, in other parts of your body from iodine-131, but it tends to concentrate in the thyroid. So you can protect your thyroid with supplementary potassium iodide, for example. And we actually sell that at our store. We sell the Iosat brand that is FDA approved for this very purpose. So you can find that at healthrangerstore.com if you want. Or you can take other sources of iodine that essentially have the same effect of protecting your thyroid. You know, just supplementary iodine, it's cause and effect. But that's not going to be the thing that kills the most people. The thing that kills people is going to be the collapse aftermath that follows. So I've already mentioned it, food collapse, energy collapse, industrial collapse, the collapse of jobs, etc. When you lose the Middle East and you lose all of the byproducts of energy, including urea for fertilizer, including polymers and plastics and lubricants and sulfuric acid and helium, etc. When you lose all of those things on the world stage, then the world cannot sustain the current structure of civilization. It's a pipeline, you know? I mean, you have to have certain supply chains that function in order to keep the current civilization alive with 8+ billion people. If the supply chains crater, then you can't feed 8 billion people. You can't employ 8 billion people. You can't provide energy for 8 billion people. And so you're going to begin to see very rapidly, if this thing goes nuclear, you're going to see die-offs, you're going to see civil unrest, you're going to see uprisings and much more all over the world. All right, so I mean, that's a whole separate podcast, is surviving Mad Max, basically. You probably know the answers to most of this. Yeah, you got to have stored food. You need to be away from the cities. You need to have a means of self-defense. You need to have a means of growing your own food and medicine and being self-reliant, etc. Have your own off-grid monetary systems, gold and silver, you know, gold backs, maybe barter, things like that. You probably know all those answers already, so I'm not going to go into those details. Here's the bigger question. If nuclear weapons are used in the Middle East, will nuclear retaliation come to North America and Europe, could London get nuked? And the answer is yes, absolutely. Could Washington, D.C. get nuked? Yes, clearly it would be targeted in a nuclear war. And as you know, Russia has more nuclear weapons than the United States. China has thousands of nuclear warheads. Pakistan has nukes. North Korea has nukes. India has nuclear weapons. And Turkey has possession of nukes that are actually U.S. nukes or NATO nukes, but they're physically located in Turkey. And there are probably other nukes that we don't know about. I mean, obviously, Israel has nukes. The thing is, if Israel goes insane and starts nuking Iran, there will be a response. There will be a response from Russia, for sure, probably China, maybe Pakistan. It's hard to say, but there will be a nuclear response. So maybe that's what Israel wants, because it's run by an apocalyptic death cult at this point. So if they nuke Iran, then Israel gets nuked, obliterated. With even just one nuke would wipe out Israel as we know it and send all those Satanists back to hell. Now, I'm talking about the ones that are the leaders of Israel, because they're all Satanists. What would then be the next effect after that? Well, depending on who launched that nuke, then the U.S. might get involved and have another retaliation in retaliation for Israel being nuked. So let's say if a nuclear weapon that detonates over Israel, let's say it was launched by a Russian submarine in the Arabian Sea, or maybe a Russian submarine in the Mediterranean, for that matter, or in the Atlantic. You know, all of these are possibilities. Would the United States then see that as an attack on its key ally, being Israel? And what would America's response be to that? That's a key question that could determine whether we live or die. If the U.S. decides that, well, we can't let Israel be nuked without a nuclear response, then the U.S. would have to decide, well, where do we attack in response to that? Because it may not be clear where the nuclear weapon even came from, actually. May not be clear at all. Especially if it's launched from sea, you don't necessarily know who launched it. Now, yeah, you can do analysis of the ratios of radioisotopes, and you can try to take a guess. Where did this weapon come from? But that doesn't tell you who launched it. Even if you know it's Russian nuclear fuel, it doesn't necessarily prove that Russia launched it. So you'd have to determine who to blame. So if the U.S. blames Russia, and if the U.S. decides to retaliate, then the question is, how would the U.S. retaliate? And the most likely answer would also be with boomer submarines, that is, nuclear-capable submarines, because the U.S. has quite a few of those. And they're also closer to Russia than, of course, the continental United States. So there's less flight time and less reaction time from Russia. So then if the U.S. decides to launch nuclear weapons at Russia, then the question is, well, how many do you launch? And if the U.S. is going for a measured response, then perhaps if one nuke were launched by Russia against Tel Aviv, then the U.S. might decide to launch one nuke against Russia in response. But the minute Russia sees one incoming nuclear or potentially nuclear ballistic missile coming in, then we get into a rapid escalation where Russia would very clearly decide that, well, World War III is on, the nuclear weapons are starting to fly, and we need to launch everything. And so they would launch everything. Under this scenario, I mean, I can't read their minds. I don't know exactly how they would respond. But they might launch everything, which would mean that every major U.S. city would be targeted and destroyed. Every major U.S. city and every military base on every island, you know, including Diego Garcia, etc. So that's how then easily 100 million Americans get vaporized within minutes. But seeing the incoming barrage of missiles from Russia, then U.S. Military forces would undoubtedly say, well, gosh, we're under nuclear attack. We need to launch everything at everybody, but especially Russia. And so the U.S. would initiate its launches of ballistic missiles to attack and try to destroy Russia. And it's possible, again, I don't know for sure, but the U.S. might also just start targeting China, too, because they figure China is an ally of Russia, and it's better to hit China's nuclear weapons silos first, preemptively, to prevent China from joining in the next wave of retaliation. So then you've got the U.S. launching whatever it is, you know, 400 missiles or something, at Russia and China. And then China sees all those missiles incoming, and China's like, well, we better launch everything. So you see where this goes very quickly, right? So that's how the world ends. It can start with one nuclear weapon, and it can end up with over 1,000 nuclear detonations happening across the world, just destroying every U.S. city, destroying many cities in Russia and many cities in China as well. And at that point, then you get a nuclear winter. At that point, it doesn't matter if you live in South America or Africa or Papua New Guinea or the Philippines, wherever you live, even if you were not nuked, you're going to live through a Mad Max famine. Because at that point, you're going to have global cooling because of all the particulate matter in the atmosphere. Yes, there will be a lot of circulating radioisotopes that will become a danger everywhere. And on top of that, you're going to block out the sun, which will cause crop failures for at least 1 year, maybe a couple of years. And our world can't survive that, not at its current population. So the only way to survive that is to be able to grow food somehow without any fuel, grow off-grid, you know, self-reliant fashion, grow most of your own food, grow enough superfoods to protect yourself from the ionizing radiation that you'll be subjected to. And maybe you've stockpiled some superfoods that could be useful. Spirulina, for example, you know, a miso soup mix, you know, fermented soy. There are a number of supplements. There are a number of superfoods that can help support your body when you're suffering a lot of, you know, exposure, let's say. But nothing's a magic bullet. Nothing's going to stop the radiation. And you're going to be subjected to some level of ionizing radiation no matter where you are on the planet. But the worst effects will be the collapse of civilization as we know it. The collapse of energy, the collapse of fuel, the collapse of, you know, farming, etc. In that scenario, just in the United States of America, I would estimate that 95% of the population will die. Because how many people do you know who can survive the collapse of all those things I just mentioned? Of food, farming, fuel, transportation, etc. They can't survive. Very few people can survive. Only the most knowledgeable, the most rugged, the most determined individuals will be able to make it through that. And that's, you know, maybe 1 out of 20, maybe, probably a lot less. So the U.S. population in that scenario would be reduced to what? Probably less than 10 million or something like that. And the world would be irradiated and toxic for centuries. And also there'd be a mass die-off all across Western Europe and all across the Middle East and all across China and Russia as well. You know, human populations would be sharply reduced to maybe half a billion people or less. Interestingly, you'd have more survival in places like Africa and low-tech countries. You'd have a lot more survival in Central and South America than you would in North America or Europe. So the global South would actually fare better than, you know, the West in this case, generally speaking, although there might be exceptions to that. So let's hope and pray that that doesn't happen, because there's no easy answer to how to survive it. Basically, even if you do survive, you're going to be living in a collapsed society that you won't recognize. And the life that you once knew will no longer exist. So your preparedness activities may not help you with that scenario. Just no matter how much you prepare, if the whole world is nuked with hundreds or 1,000 nuclear weapons, there might not be that much that you can do. It depends on a lot of things. But that may not be the most likely outcome. There are a lot of other scenarios that are, I think, more likely, such as limited use of nuclear weapons. In those scenarios, you can absolutely survive it. And you need to be prepared. You need to have, you know, pre-nuke food. And we're selling pre-nuke food right now at healthrangerstore.com. It's food that was harvested, for the most part, in 2025. Some of it this year in 2026. But it's pre-nuke food. And whoever doesn't have pre-nuke food will have to eat, well, post-nuke food with fallout, you know, fallout food, basically. Fallout food will be very cheap. Discounts, coupons. Hey, you want some fallout food? Pre-fallout food will be incredibly scarce and valuable. An incredible barter item, especially if you can prove that it's not irradiated or emitting radiation. Because remember, if you grow food in a field where there's been cesium-137 fallout, the cesium-137 goes into the tissues of the crops. It mimics potassium in agriculture. And when that happens, then those crops, they emit radiation. And if you eat them, then you incorporate those molecules into your body, and then you emit radiation from the inside, which is what ultimately kills you by destroying your genetic integrity. So, pre-fallout food will have a premium. Poor people will eat post-fallout food, and they will die very quickly. And sadly, that will be most people, because most people have not prepared at all for what's coming. So, the bottom line is, preparedness still makes a lot of sense here, but it won't save you from absolutely everything. It will save you from many scenarios, but not every single one. And that's to be expected. You know, if these demonic entities that are currently running the U.S., I'm talking about Trump and Netanyahu and Israel and so on, if they have their way, they will destroy the world and they will make it unsurvivable for human beings. And that's what they're trying to achieve. That's very clear. They're trying to do that. If they fail, then, you know, billions of us will survive this. So let's pray for that outcome. In the meantime, get prepared as best you can. You will need backup communications. Our sponsor, the Satellite Phone Store, offers those, of course, sat123.com. You'll need backup power. You will need, backup medicine, food, seeds, etc. And a lot of good fortune along the way, a lot of hard work, a lot of discipline, a lot of knowledge, etc. So stay informed and get ready for a true end of the world scenario, because that's what seems to be coming. You can follow more of my podcasts at brightvideos.com. You can read my articles at naturalnews.com, and you can download now 50,000 books that are all free to download at brightlearn.ai. That's the book website, the book generation site that I built, that over 10,000 authors have used. And we now have over 200 audiobooks available there. And I'll be packaging up those audiobooks so you can download all those together as well. Soon. That feature is coming soon. So take advantage of the resources that are available to you right now to get prepared, because the world is about to become a very, very dangerous place, and not everybody's going to survive by design. By design. They want billions of humans to not make it. Try not to be among those who die. Unless you want to die. I mean, maybe you don't want to survive in the world that's been destroyed. There's going to be a lot of that, But I'm just assuming that you still want to survive, even if everything's been destroyed. So if that's you, then, you know, get ready, because you're going to need it. All right, thanks for listening. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger. Take care.
It's not the American people.
Yes.
It's this ruling class that's dominating us, that's filled with all of these unelected bureaucrats and ghoulish type figures that are driving this country and making it poorer, making it more violent, and then enacting that violence abroad. So when we overthrow countries, where do people go? They end up leaving and coming to Europe, they come to the US, and then we have a crisis of migration because we destroyed their countries or we sanctioned them into oblivion. This is the cycle, and we want to break this cycle.
Welcome to today's interview here on brightvideos.com. As we are standing on the edge of the abyss as beings on planet Earth, with Trump issuing these insane, deranged threats to destroy an entire civilization, in this case, the Persian civilization, that is far older than the United States of America, by the way, that needs to be pointed out. And I'm joined today by a first-time guest, someone who I think can bring a lot of common sense to this and excellent analysis, but a voice that, I've never spoken to our guests until just now. And it's Chris Halali, and he's the co-founder, the co-editor of DD Geopolitics, which is a very popular channel on X. And also, he's got his own show on YouTube. Welcome, Mr. Halali. Thank you for taking the time to join us today.
Thank you very much for having me, sir. It's a pleasure to be on.
It's great to have you on. And I'm so glad that we can have this important conversation. Let me just set a little bit of context, and I'll ask you to introduce yourself to our audience. Now, the urgency of what's happening in our world right now brings together people who might come from different political persuasions or backgrounds or leanings, and that's totally fine. What we have in common, I think, and pardon my language, is that we all don't want to fucking die in a global nuclear, again, pardon my language, I don't normally do that, but this is where we are. So give us a little bit of your background and your channel for our audience, and then we'll go from there.
Sure. So I'm an Iranian American. My father's from Iran and my mom's from Greece. And I was born in the USA. I graduated from US universities, did my graduate work in the US as well as in China and Greece. I was a commissioned US Army officer, commissioned as 11 Alpha as an infantry officer, and resigned my commission as a chaplain candidate, disagreeing heavily with the US foreign policy under the Obama administration. Left in 2015. In 2016, I ended up working with refugees coming out of Syria. And in 2017, I fought in Syria against the Islamic State alongside Kurdish forces, as well as I coordinated with Russian forces, with Wagner and the Syrian Arab Army, which is Bashar al-Assad's military. So I fought in Syria. I came back to the US, did more graduate work. And then since that time, I was elected high bailiff. I ran for Congress. I didn't get into Congress, but I was one of the first communists to run in three decades or so. Was elected just this past election as a high bailiff of Orange County, Vermont. And now I'm doing journalism and war correspondent work. I'm here in Moscow now. I've spent a lot of time on the front of the special military operation against Ukraine. I went and traveled to Yemen, to Sana'a, and was there when the Americans were bombing there. Lebanon, all throughout Iraq. So I've traveled, I've been to over 100 countries, did a lot of work abroad. So my primary work now is journalism. I also do diplomatic and legal consulting, as well as, really pushing for some common sense in my political activism, trying to push for some common sense foreign policy for the United States, and to really bring us back from the edge of the abyss here, as you rightfully pointed out.
Well, that is an extraordinary background, sir. I have to say that's you've done a lot. You've traveled a lot. You are clearly multilingual as well. And I think you have a very important view of what's happening with the world. Again, even though we come from different political backgrounds, you mentioned communists. My audience is mostly, they used to be, many of them were conservative, I think, but most of them despise Trump at this point. So they're more sort of Ron Paul libertarian kind of people, and a lot of independent thinkers. That's really, my audience is not, they're not tribal. They don't worship men. They have principles. Right. So that's where they come from. But tell us in your view now, again, DD Geopolitics is a channel that's really blowing up in terms of popularity all over X. What is the aim of DD Geopolitics, and what is the main thrust of your work and your posts right now?
Well, speaking of the Ron Paul sort of like libertarian audience, I mean, I had Ron Paul on my show. I have a very good relationship with him, with many others in that realm. Scott Horton, you name it. McAdams, we have a whole crew of people. And actually, I find myself agreeing on most things. We might not agree about economic issues, but we can certainly agree, for example, on foreign policy, anti-imperialism, and a lot of these issues that are dominating our time. We're against wars. We're against, you know, 1,000+ foreign military bases. We're against regime change. We really are, in many ways, I can agree with probably most of your audience on most of the issues. I also believe that states should have strong borders. It's necessary. I believe that there should be processes for people to travel from country to country. These are all normal things. China has it, Russia has it, every country has it that I travel to. So that's nothing, you know, outside of the bounds. But what we are, you know, focused on, what DD Geopolitics is committed to, is bringing an anti-imperialist and resistance voice to especially the global majority, the global South, about the U.S. crimes, U.S. Regime change wars and endless wars. And really what we end up calling it is it's the Epstein class. It's not American people. And a lot of people that I interact with, they know that. It's not the American people.
Yes.
It's this ruling class that's dominating us, that's filled with all of these unelected bureaucrats and ghoulish type figures that are driving this country and making it poorer, making it more violent, and then enacting that violence abroad. So when we overthrow countries, where do people go? They end up leaving and coming to Europe. They come to the US, and then we have a crisis of migration because we destroyed their countries or we sanctioned them into oblivion. This is the cycle, and we want to break this cycle. We want to have an America that is part of a multipolar world that is a partner for peace and prosperity, not a partner for violence and endless chaos.
Well, we absolutely agree with you. And I've said many times that I want to trade with the world. I want to trade knowledge and goods and services and technology. I don't want to coerce the world or bomb people into compliance with our demands as the American empire. And let me just share with you a little bit of my background. I mean, I was given a Freedom Award by the United States Congress. I've been invited to meet Trump twice now, and I've turned it down both times because I don't agree with his ethics and values. I am pro-America, but the original vision of America, which was not imperialistic, we weren't into colonizing and bombing and coercing and punishing other nations, and certainly not into genocide, supporting genocide, and ending in entire civilizations, which is what Trump is promising right now. That's why I have openly called repeatedly all day today, impeach Trump. I texted my congressman, impeach Trump, 25th Amendment. And I'm not alone, right? I'm not alone. There are, what, 24 or 25 members of Congress calling for that today? Have you kept track of that?
There are. I saw Ro Khanna. I saw many others who've come out and spoken about this as well, both congressmen as well as some senators who've also spoken out. I don't know the exact number because it's changing. I think minute by minute, we're getting new information. People are coming out. But certainly, I agree with you. Trump is a different man than he was before. And I actually had some common points of agreement with Trump. He had come into office saying no more endless wars, no regime change wars. We're going to stop the war in Ukraine. We're going to stop this. We're going to stop that. I was very supportive of that. I want peace. I want a prosperous America. But this that we're getting right now, we are now in the eighth conflict that the Trump administration has unleashed in less than 2 years. What are we doing? What good does this do? I just don't understand it. So I'm with you. I'm with you. At this point, it's clear the 25th Amendment needs to be invoked and Trump needs to be removed. And there needs to be some sanity because right now we're getting mixed messages by minute. It seems to go with the stock market. It goes with the price of oil. Nobody knows what's going on. Is Netanyahu dictating American foreign policy? Who knows what's going on? And I think it's very concerning for American voters and taxpayers.
Well, absolutely. And I'd like to get your reaction to this because I did a special podcast on the destruction of the industrial city of Al Jubail, which is being bombed in retaliation. Of course, that's in Saudi Arabia. It's being bombed in retaliation for the aggression against Iran's energy infrastructure by Israel and the United States. But this Al Jubail facility, which is 1,000 square kilometers, it produces something like 6 or 7% of the hydrocarbon-based feedstock products, including for lubricants and plastics and so on, that affect the entire world. And yet here I am in Texas, and I'm surrounded by people in America who think that this war will just stay over there, that it won't impact us. And they don't understand supply chains. They don't understand industry. They don't understand chemistry, or where the role of naphtha, for example, the role of sulfuric acid, the role of helium. Can you please explain the importance of what I'm talking about here, the destruction of the infrastructure that powers modern human civilization?
You're absolutely right. In fact, it's not even, for example, on the petrochemical side, it's not only industrial products in the sense of heavy industries, capital goods. We're talking about agriculture, fertilizers.
Yes.
There's already a decrease of fertilizers on the market now, and we're getting into spring and growing season now. Farmers across the world are basically trying to rush for supplies. Russia has put a ban on exports of those things. China is also trying to control their fertilizers and to make sure that their farmers are protected. I mean, we really are about to have a man-made famine in some parts of the world because of this. So you have, exactly as you said, helium, which is necessary for industrial goods, for scientific exploration, for technological advancements. We're seeing a variety of byproducts of petroleum. It's not only the gas and the diesel and the aviation fuel, for example. It's many more things that come from that, from those hydrocarbons that are extracted, especially in the Arabian Peninsula or in the Persian Gulf region. So when you add that together, you take away 10-20% of that. You take away even 5 or 10%, even a smaller amount, you're going to affect supply chains. You're going to affect people in different parts of the world. And what does that mean? Let's translate this. Farmers don't have enough. There's not enough food. Then there's riots and protests and coup d'etats and civil wars. And what ends up happening? You drive conflict. People end up fleeing countries. Then they go into other countries that then destabilize those countries. And it becomes this domino effect until you have a mass militarization across some regions. And we've seen that, by the way. We've seen that over the past decade plus. So this is a very destructive path that we're on, not only for there. Okay, you're exactly right. People in the US are saying, oh, we don't have to worry about it. It's over there. When it starts to affect supply chains and it starts to affect what you get at Walmart and what you get at the big lots and things like that, that's where it becomes an impact. It's not only at the gas pump, it's in all of the supply chain, including food at your local supermarket when you're going to go. A lot of that comes from Latin America or from abroad. How do you think they get their fertilizers? How do you think that they, are able to transport it? All of that, all those costs are included in this war that's happening in the Middle East. That will have a knock-on effect. And I think that we're going to see the possibility of a global recession. If what happens in the next 24 to 48 hours is as catastrophic as as I'm thinking it might be, if they end up crossing that Rubicon, we could see a mass global recession. We could see significant damage to many countries. And just imagine that domino series coming down. I'm really worried. I'm really worried. I have kids. I don't know if you have kids, but I'm really worried for their future. They're dragging everybody down. They're pulling the temple down upon everybody's heads. And we didn't ask for this. In fact, we asked for the opposite of this.
Yes,
and that's
yes.
The real problem.
Well, and you use the term global recession, and I know you're choosing your words carefully, but I would argue that that's a very mild interpretation of what could be unleashed. And
for sure.
We already have early indications. For example, in South Korea, many companies have already declared force majeure on their chemical output because of a lack of natural gas. We've seen with Qatar Energy, 2 of the 14 LNG trains have already been destroyed with a 3 to 5 year repair time, according to Qatar Energy's official announcement. If the other 12 trains are destroyed, then the world as we know it does not function for 10 to 15 years. And that's assuming they can even rebuild it, because if Iran hammers the desalination plants and hammers the energy infrastructure in retaliation, then nobody can live in Qatar, Bahrain, Oman, UAE. I mean, the area becomes uninhabitable. And then that leads to what you just said, mass human migration to Turkey, to Europe, to India, to wherever, so they don't die. I mean, this is a disruption that we've never seen in our lifetimes or in history.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And think about the political consequences of that. Think about the consequences in a whole variety of countries that are already experiencing their own issues, right, domestically. When we saw, for example, millions of Syrians leaving Syria, they went to Turkey and then they crossed over into Europe. Think about all of the knock-on effects that had for Europe as well. That's still reeling from that today. When we have the election this weekend of Viktor Orban in Hungary, the re-election. All of these things factor into all of these political campaigns, to all of these domestic policies within some of these European countries. And this tension that's created is creating the conditions for, I think, even further eruptions of violence. I'm really at a loss of words here as to why we have embarked on this path. I mean, I think that you and I clearly understand some of the background as to what got us here, but this is really very, very dangerous. If we don't stop this from escalating even further, we could see effects that will last a century or longer. We haven't seen this kind of warfare since the Middle Ages, really. Like long-durée type warfare.
Well, part of what's powering this, and I'd love your response to this, is there's a psyop of cultural hatred that's being taught to the American people to hate all Iranians, to hate all Russians. And I'm not talking about just casual hatred. I mean, even Trump mentioned it's okay to bomb their bridges and power plants because they're animals, he said. This is kind of like the way Israel refers to Palestinians as the Amalek. And it's really the Israelification of the Trump administration, which is considering everybody that they want to kill to be subhumans. And I am highly offended by this as not just an American, but as a member of humanity. We cannot function with this level of intense hatred towards fellow human beings just because we want to steal their oil, which is the common thread between Iran and Russia from America's point of view. We want to rape and pillage other countries, so we make up excuses to do it. What are your thoughts on this intense hatred that's being taught to the American people?
I absolutely agree with you 100% that this is the Israelification of U.S. foreign policy and even domestic policy. I mean, a lot of this sort of hatred, not only for Iranians, for Russians, but also the culture war stuff, seems to me absolutely out of the CIA playbook, the strategy of tension, the sort of creation of enemy from within. We saw this in the years of Lead in Italy. We saw this in other parts where the CIA was deeply involved. We see it in Ukraine from 2014 onwards, and even a little bit prior to that, with the US actively supporting Azov and Pravi sector and these groups, these neo-Nazi groups that went out there to try to destroy and kill Russians and destroy their heritage and their language and their Orthodox church. I mean, when you factor all of this, this is absolutely part of that deep state playbook. And what that ends up doing is it ends up really only supporting and buttressing the power of the elite against the common people, because I have a lot in common with my neighbor, even though they might be a different religion or ethnic makeup or different language. I have a lot more in common if they're working class than I do with anybody on Wall Street, than I do with anybody who went to an Ivy League frat and ended up getting a nice cushy job because of their last name or their tradition, whatever it might be. And they got to Wall Street or they got to Washington and they became an unelected bureaucrat. I have a lot more in common with somebody who's an immigrant than one of those people. And I think people have to understand that. The American experience, and I was an American history professor, in American history, the experience in the early 20th century, when people were coming over from Italy, from Ireland, from all parts of Europe, from Eastern Europe, and they came over and they started to organize in unions, and they started to say, look, this situation is unacceptable. We remember the robber barons, you know, the progressive era, the Gilded Age. You had the Carnegies, the Rockefellers. I look at that part of history and I say everybody got together. Even they had different languages, different cultures. Some were from Sweden, some were from France, from Italy, wherever. And they got together and they said, look, these guys up above, they're stealing everything from us. We deserve something. And that helped to pave the way for what eventually became, especially after the post-World War II era, the American dream. Now we're living the American nightmare because everybody's being put against one another. And we don't have an opportunity to advance. You know, our kids are going to be saddled with debt, not only government debt, their personal debt. Everybody is suffering here, economically speaking, because we're investing everything in a military-industrial complex and sending it abroad. Why do all these countries need billions of dollars of hard-earned American taxpayer money? So add all that together, and now we have to make Russia the enemy, China the enemy, Iran the enemy. Why do we need so many enemies? In fact, I live now in Moscow. people love Americans. They say, we love America. We wish we could be friends. Why are we not friends? And I keep on trying to tell them, Americans have no problem with ordinary Russian people. It's created from above. It's pushed from above. And that kind of inculcating of this hatred is done so that these guys can run away with, you know, billions and trillions of dollars on endless war, on their military arms, on stealing supplies and resources from other countries. But it doesn't help the common people. The common people want to be together. That's why if we look at it in that perspective, clearly we can understand where this is coming from.
Okay, that's a really great description. And let me dig a little bit deeper into that and ask for your answer to this. You mentioned you were an American history professor at one point. And so see if this tracks with you. And it's okay to disagree with me. You're the guest. You can disagree if you wish, no problem. But I think that after the post-World War II era, when America was very strongly in an abundance phase, our culture was one of hard work, of discipline, of innovation, and trade. At that time, we wanted to be friends with everybody in the world because we wanted the world to buy our stuff. We were exporters, right? So we wanted lots of friends. And by the way, my grandparents lived in a tent getting a job with a manufacturing company, and you were provided a tent on a plot and you were given a salary. And they lived through, you know, the Great Depression, lived in a tent, but they were hard workers and they were able to pick themselves up from that and become very successful. So, my ancestry has lived that American dream. But now something has happened that's very toxic to our culture, which has become a culture of complacency and one where we expect to be given everything for free, where we can just print money anytime we want and we can trade that debt for other countries' products and services. And then after we offshored so much of the manufacturing, then it became an issue of, well, we don't make stuff in America. Now we have to take it from someone else. Then we have to declare everybody else to be an enemy so we can take their oil, Venezuela or Iran, or we can take their goods, or we can tariff them. We can economically sanction them as Trump has done in a weaponized fashion since almost day one. Does that make sense to you? Is that what I just described? Is that tracking or would you disagree with that?
No, certainly I think parts of that are correct. I would go a little bit deeper and try to go to the root of that. For example, the offshoring, the destruction of America's industrial base was done with the pure sort of free market capitalist and monopolistic tendencies of the big manufacturers. For example, why pay an American worker a great union wage? For example, I think of, you know, Bethlehem Steel, and I had, you know, family members, from my ex-wife's family who were workers, steel workers, and people who were very much involved in that process. And, you know, they were very close with political leaders. You know, that was one of the big, you know, the steel making, especially in that whole corridor, was a huge, huge part of America's, you know, strength. And then slowly, why do you need that if you can liquidate it, you can offshore it, you can pay somebody a fraction of that amount, then you can get it cheaper and you end up selling it. And that whole process, that whole supply chain, then you knock out the American worker, you send it abroad to East Asia, for example, you're able to get it cheaper. Then you're able to really push a consumer economy on the Americans. So that way they then sort of transition from industrial production, an industrial economy, to a consumer economy. And then you need to continue to have cheaper and cheaper products because people's wages are not growing as fast as they should be. And so you end up eventually having this Walmartification, you know, or McDonaldization, as people would call it in the academic sphere of the society, to where products get cheaper and more inferior. And I want people to think about this because I had a farm in the US for 8 years. Farming products back in the day, old John Deere's, old, you know, Massey Ferguson, you name it, all the old tractors, those things are still running from 1930s, 1940s.
I own some of those, by the way. I have John Deere's from the 1970s.
So you know that the quality of the production was amazing. Why? Because it wasn't planned obsolescence. They really wanted to invest in good products that lasted, because the end goal, okay, yes, it's good to make a profit, but there's also a social good and a social element that comes with that. Now, for example, farmers are persecuted for fixing and repairing their John Deere's, which are much more plastic and electronic based now. And now people are actually getting arrested and getting fined for doing that kind of stuff. So I just want to say that we've lost a lot of that heritage. Yes, sure, part of the American spirit was pick yourself up by the bootstrap, work hard, you'll succeed, kind of that frontier mentality. But all of that has gone by the wayside when you create an economy that's consumer-based and you want everyone to consume faster and quicker and spend more money and go into more debt by taking out debt. Whereas before, our grandparents, when they came to this country, they needed only a little bit. They had the best products that they could buy, and they didn't have to replace them every year. Now you replace products yearly or biannually, and it's just horrible. And the waste. But that's how the entire system has adjusted that way. And that system adjustment has also had an impact on our lives as well, on our personal lives. You see the quality of housing going down, the quality of insulation going down, the quality of building materials going down, because that race to the bottom, which is a tendency of the free market, but in the most extreme sense, that race to the bottom has led us to this point where everything is inferior, everything breaks. And if you want to buy something really good, it's very niche and very, very expensive. And I'm sure your listeners understand what I'm trying to say here.
Yeah, absolutely correct. I just want to remind our audience that you have a channel on YouTube called The Chris Halali Show. I'm showing the screen right here. In addition to your work with DD Geopolitics, which is very popular on X. And please stand by, Chris, because we're going to do this interview in two parts. This is the end of part one. I just want to encourage our audience to check out part two at brightvideos.com. And be sure to visit Chris's channel and website and follow him or his organization on X at DD Geopolitics for a lot more of this. So thank you for watching part one here today. I'm Mike Adams with brightvideos.com. Take care. We now have vitamin D3 plus K2 plus Aquaman, which is a seaweed calcium, available at healthrangerstore.com. Here, I've got it up on my side here. This is the Groovy Bee brand that we have, which is our in-house brand, healthrangerstore.com. Again, vitamin D3 plus K2 with Aquaman. That's the brand of the seaweed calcium in a capsule format. Of course, it's laboratory tested for heavy metals and glyphosate and microbiology and so much more. And it's certified ingredients, of course. And, you know, everything that we build for you in terms of a product is meticulously sourced. And one of the most difficult products to source is actually vitamin D3. It's extremely difficult because it turns out in the supply chain, almost all vitamin D has a bunch of sort of unnamed ingredients in it. And that's what our sourcing people found after a couple of years of trying to source a clean version of vitamin D3 that we finally found and nailed and put it in the formula and did all the lab testing and certification. So now it's available. So this synergistic combination, if you think about natural bone support, for example, or you think about the fact that so many people may not have sufficient levels of vitamin D for just optimal health and immune support and, you know, many other reasons to have vitamin D levels, this product can help you supplement that. And so it's available now, healthrangerstore.com, vitamin D3 plus K2 with Aquaman, 60 capsules available, shipping right now while supplies last. And in this environment where global supply chains are getting wrecked, you know, if this is something you want, get it now while we have supplies, because it's becoming more difficult and more expensive to source literally everything at this point. So anyway, thank you for your support. You can also find many other products, of course, hundreds of different products at healthrangerstore.com, including storable food. And right here we have our organic powdered chicken bone broth in a number 10 can, our turmeric root powder, and so much more. We've got so many amazing products for you to choose from, including tinctures, superfoods, storable foods, as well as freeze-dried fruits and vegetables in sealed number 10 cans. That's great for long-term storage. Plus, we have iodine, and that's a product that's moving very quickly because of concerns about, you know, global nuclear war, unfortunately. But you can find all of this. It's all laboratory tested. It's all certified. It's all meticulously sourced at healthrangerstore.com. And yeah, there we go. That's what the vitamin D3 looks like there. Thank you for supporting us, because we need your support in order to fund our platform. And so we can keep bringing you amazing interviews and content and free AI tools
for knowledge, and so much more. So thank you for supporting us. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, for healthrangerstore.com.